rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Connolly, Judge Smith, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Thank you. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, 4th day of May, 2022. And welcome to in-person oral arguments. We're delighted to be here. We have three cases on the calendar this morning. The first is Frederick Mann, Relator versus Northern Pines Mental Health Center and Department of Employment and Economic Development. We are ready for arguments from Appellant's Counsel. Would you please introduce yourself for the record? You'll have 15 minutes for argument and an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Howard Bolter. I represent the relator, Frederick Mann, in the matter before the court today. And just as an aside, it's good to be back in the court today. This appeal, we're here today because of an appeal that arises from a deed decision upon which they lacked authority and jurisdiction. After almost 6 months, after the determination of eligibility had become final, deed issued a nullification order. Then they amended the determination, and a hearing ensued where misconduct was found. But because the initial determination had become final, deed lacked statutory authority to nullify in the first place and should never have issued the amended determinations or heard the matter in the first place. What's important here, I think, is the procedural posture. Normally, I would say that's not a big deal, but today it is. On 10-5 of 2020, that's when Mann filed the initial claim for benefits. On 10-22, deed, which I'm referring to the department, so I say deed, they issued a determination of eligibility, which included the statutory language that the determination will become final unless an appeal is filed by Thursday, November 12th, 2020. And that was sent to the employer address. No appeal was filed. November 12th, 2020 came and went. Mr. Mann was receiving his benefits for nearly 6 months until April 2nd, 2021, when deed issued a notice of nullification out of the blue.
Mr. Counsel, sorry. It's been a while. What if it had been sent entirely to the wrong address and the employer never received it? Would there be statutory authority to deed to do what it did? If through no fault of its own, it sent it to the wrong place?
I think if it was sent to the wrong address altogether and it never triggered an employer time limit from running, then there would be some argument. And that's the case that was cited by deed. But that's distinguishable from this case because there's no evidence that the employer never received it. It went to their address. They're just saying, oh, it was not the representative, or if it was a different address, or we didn't know anything about this until the brief. Yeah. That there was anything wrong with the address.
Counsel, that I have a follow-up question to that. My understanding of the Stassen case is if through no fault of the employer, the notification is sent to an incorrect address, then that doesn't harm the employer. In other words, it's not untimely. I think the issue, though, is do we know if it was sent to the wrong address? If it was sent to the wrong address, why did that happen? Who is at fault? Is it your client's fault? Is it deed's fault? Is it the employer's fault? There just seems to be a whole lot we don't know. Did you consider asking for a remand to sort some of this out? I mean, I note that there is a complaint that this issue wasn't raised. So, of course, we don't have any facts about who mailed what, where, and when, and who received what.
I mean, if remand is something the court will do, I guess that's an alternative. I mean, that's not the best alternative for my client because, we think that the decision became final and he's entitled to his benefits. And the Stassen case, I'm sorry.
But the other side says, well, unless a court were to find, as it did in Stassen, the notice didn't get mailed to the correct address through no fault of the employer. So it seems to be there's a defense to your argument, and then the issue becomes, do we have enough information to consider that, to consider Stassen's application? And, the argument that, well, there's no evidence to show that, it's like, well, that's partially because you didn't raise this below. So I don't know if it would be fair necessarily to say, well, you didn't raise this, it is an issue, no remand, you win when people weren't put on notice of the need to present such evidence.
Okay, two points there. In Stassen, the notice was sent to a former address. They never got it. And yes, there's no evidence that our position in this case is there's no evidence that they never received it. They received it, they just didn't appeal it. And we couldn't have raised that because no one told him that the wrong address was used. He didn't know that. So, you know, there might have been just mistakes made, but I think these are mistakes by deed and not by Mr. Mann. He did everything he was supposed to do. He filed his benefit, he filed the claim, he picked the employer. He doesn't see employer account details. That's according to deeds brief.
Doesn't Stassen seem to say that if it's entirely deeds fault and not the employer's fault, then the clock doesn't start? I mean, as I understand Stassen, somebody has to convince the court or the ULJ that the incorrect mailing was the fault of the employer or the employer's failure to exercise reasonable efforts to make sure deed was aware of what its primary address was. I noticed that deed submits some extra record documents here. I mean, I don't know what those mean. I don't begin to know how to interpret them, but what I can look down and see is there's three addresses for the employer that all say this is the primary address. So then, of course, I'm asking, well, how's the employee supposed to know which one to pick? So it seems to me there's a lot to sort out here.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree with that. I had the same difficulties interpreting the paperwork, and there are three primary addresses, okay. And one of them was chosen by Mr. Mann.
So why no remand? Why would you argue that a remand is not appropriate here?
Well, it just seems that in this case we don't have any issues raised by the employer that they didn't receive this document. That's in Stassen there was. They did say we never got this. We never had the opportunity. There's no reference to that here, and you'd think that would be the first thing out of their mouths would be, we didn't get this. We didn't know about it. They didn't.
So what
say
you're
that.
Saying is the employer didn't raise this as a defense at the hearing.
Correct. They did not.
And wouldn't you also say, Mr. Bolter, that, you know, if the employer wants to give three addresses, then you can't complain when your client used one of them?
Exactly. Exactly.
And so it's kind of like, you know, you could have said mail here only, or, you know, official, or, you know, personal. Well, I mean, who would do this? But, you know, you could say just use this for you know, you could say whatever you want. But once you give three, you know, then don't complain when someone actually uses one.
I completely agree with that. I mean, he picked, his employer's name was there with the address that he recognized. He put it in there. And
it looks like he picked the one that's closest to the office where he worked.
And it's the primary address. Yeah. And it's still the
primary
address.
Well, one of three primary addresses.
Yeah, but it's certainly one of the primary addresses. Yeah. So,
and I'm sorry, Mr. Bolton. Also, just one last, I'm just looking, but was the your client represented at the ULJ hearings by counsel?
No, he was not. So there are some questions to be answered, but I don't think they need that. It's fair to have them go back to re-answer them, because this critical issue of was it sent to somebody or did they receive it was never raised by the employer, and they shouldn't be entitled to now raise it because the decision had become final.
So what you're saying is we shouldn't be, you know, deed is saying we shouldn't be considering the jurisdiction because it wasn't raised. You're saying we shouldn't be considering their response to the jurisdiction because they didn't raise, the employer didn't raise it, not deed, but the employer didn't make any claim that it had not received the notice.
That's right, but my jurisdiction arguments are well supported by case law that say that if jurisdiction is raised for the first time on appeal, it can be considered. Whereas a material issue of fact that's raised for the first, you know, or a defense that's raised for the first time on appeal, okay, would not be considered. So,
Mr. Bolter, how long has your client not, from the time he asked for them up to now, because he's not getting them, how long has that been?
I believe he stopped receiving, and the payment was, he was ordered to repay in June 14 of 21.
What was the additional repayment amount? I note that the overpayment amount in the order did not include like the extra $300 a month. So what did he actually come up with for an overpayment?
I don't know the exact numbers, but I know that the number just from the deed side of it was 20,000 something. So it's a significant sum.
If you know, does the record reveal what your client was making on an annual basis?
I believe it was 60,000. It was in the record, but
that's fine.
Yeah, some like 60,000.
Thank you, Mr. Bolter.
Well, that addresses my arguments in chief. I'd like to reserve my response to deeds, the response for the hearing to my rebuttal.
Okay.
So unless there's other questions, I will rest at this point.
Well, Mr. Bolter, by the way, my apologies. I think I said Bolton. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm just wondering about the argument that deed didn't raise an issue. Why would they have raised any issue if there was no challenge to the whether the second notice was substitute notice or whatever was valid? I guess I'm not even sure why they would be on any. There'd be any reason for them to argue it went to the wrong address because there's no complaint about it before the ULJ.
Right. Well, I mean, Mr. Mann couldn't have complained about it because he didn't know. Indeed, I think should have identified that this was an issue. If they're saying that, if that's what somehow triggered them to issue the nullification order, I mean, something triggered that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, if I'm understanding their argument, it was that a new employer account number was triggered at some point, and that showed a new address. I mean, I think it was incumbent on them to raise this issue so that at least Mr. Mann would know what they were talking about, and we could have addressed this at the ULJ hearing. But I think that's what triggered it in the first place. They knew they sent the other determinations to a different address. And that's what they're relying on now. I mean, they clearly knew about it. I don't know why they didn't raise it.
So the determination from October was sent to one of the addresses that's listed as a primary address on the document that deed submitted.
The documents in front of the court today, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And we really don't have an explanation, perhaps deed will, as to, you know, how would one know that it's this one of three primary addresses. Is it the employer's responsibility? I note that the document that deed submitted actually says, as a warning to employers, where is that language? Sorry, I thought I'd tabbed all my pages. Oh. It says, please remember to keep the contact information associated with this account up to date. We use this contact information to let you know when former employees apply for unemployment benefits. So, I mean, this is, you know, right here is telling the employer, keep your address up to date. And I guess I don't know, you know, how is it that we have three primary mailing addresses?
I don't know. And, I mean, the addresses, I think, are up to date. That primary address that he's had his case
sent. They just have three of them.
You just have three.
Yeah.
I'll have to remember that the next time I get sued. They always have multiple
addresses. I mean, it's
preferably
one of those
some
things,
out of state.
It just seems like it's one of those things where it's not a very user-friendly system.
But then the issue becomes, is that deed's fault or the employer's fault? Because the employer, as the employer did in Stassen, kind of argued, look, I made the change to my address on one page of their website. I assume that would take care of all the pages. Unknown to me, the employer, I had to go to these other pages, and we said, it's good enough. The employer made the effort. How do we know that the employer didn't make the effort here?
We don't. I don't.
We don't. I get it. Okay.
We don't. So unless there's anything more about mailing addresses and such, I will rest at this point and see you again at rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll hear from counsel for the department. Would you please state your name for the record?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Lawson Allen. I represent Deed, the respondent in this issue. And the matter presents two questions for the court, the first being the jurisdiction question, whether the judge had jurisdiction to issue its decision holding the applicant ineligible to receive unemployment benefits based upon the applicant's separation from employment with Northern Pines. And then second, if the court holds it does, whether the judge got it right. procedurally, I think this is where we're all confused on this issue, and allow me to explain what happened here and why this is sort of a unique circumstance from a system perspective. The applicant in this issue doesn't first apply in October. The applicant first applies in March 2020. And when the applicant files that application for unemployment benefits, the department looks at generally the preceding four complete calendar quarters in advance of the application to determine his eligibility level for benefits, and that is known as the base period. Mm-hmm. Within that base period, we have employers that have reported to the department that they had paid wages to the applicant. And at that point, we determine a level of eligibility for the applicant, and he begins to receive unemployment benefits. This applicant, however, returns to work in April, about a month after filing the initial application. After returning to work for a little over 2 months, the applicant again becomes unemployed. At that time, the applicant files to reactivate his benefit account. And that's something an applicant must do to again request benefits after a period of inactivity in the account, generally 4 to 5 weeks, just depending on the dates. When the applicant does that, he is required to report whether he has worked for a new employer, meaning an employer outside of his base period. That's the case here. He had not worked for Northern Pines during his base period, which is essentially the calendar year 2019. The applicant reports yes, and because we don't have reports associated from the employer, meaning reported wages in the base period, the applicant must indicate the employer that he separated from.
How does the employee in this case know which primary address to pick?
Well, the applicant never gets a choice to pick an address. The applicant would, when prompted, type the name of an employer.
Okay.
And in this case, two accounts show up, Northern Pines. They have the exact same name, and they have the exact same primary address. So the applicant in this case would be presented with two choices. Which did the applicant separate from? The applicant is not entitled or does not have access to any additional details regarding the circumstances.
Okay, so let me just stop you. What you're telling the court is when he went in to reactivate, he got to a screen that showed him two options, both had the same address, and he picked one.
That is correct.
How do we get to the point where Dita's saying there was a mistake and the employer wasn't sent the initial October determination of eligibility? And what happened? What went wrong?
Therein is why this is such an unusual case. Northern Pines terminated a tax-paying employer account in 2004. It began a new employer account in 2004 that is a reimbursable account. Change in the dynamic it has in terms of reimbursing the trust fund for benefits paid to it. Deed maintains files. It's a self-service system. So an employer generates an employer account, and it is when it terminates the account, the profile's still there. A number of reasons for that. First is so that an applicant can who's subsequently discharged, has some link to that employment and those wage credits. So in this case, because there are two different employer accounts, they've got the same primary address, they've got the same name, the same operation, we've got a circumstance where an employee can click on the incorrect employer, not the most recent.
So you're not saying it was the employee's fault, he just didn't know any better?
I don't think that culpability is the correct term here. He could not have known.
He could not have known.
He was clicking on an outdated account.
What is your position as to the employer's responsibility for the error?
Well, I think that the employer is consistent with the holding of Stats and bears no responsibility for the mismailing here. And it's a mismailing because the statute...
I'm sorry, did you say no less responsibility?
No responsibility.
Oh, no responsibility.
For the mismailing here.
Okay, I want to just stop you because I feel like I'm trying a case here. I mean, everything you're telling us is incredibly helpful, but we don't have any of this in the briefs. We don't have any sort of record that tells us that is, in fact, what happened. I think we would have a problem to say, well, we believe you, because we've then, I think, made you a witness, and we've found facts to conclude that the employer had no responsibility for this mistake. I mean, isn't that the path we're going down here?
I don't think so. Deed briefs sort of the account stands here, the timeline. It indicates when the accounts are active, when they become terminated or inactive. Deed also includes...
No, but what if someone would just say, D deeds brief is wrong. I mean, isn't that the purpose of a fact-finding hearing? People are put under oath, questions are asked, and then the fact finder determines, okay, here's what happened, how it happened, and why we have a mistake, and the employer does or does not bear any responsibility.
Well, it's accurate that the extra record information that deed submitted in support of its brief was not subject to examination or testimony. That is correct.
So I'll ask you what I asked opposing counsel. Why not a remand? Okay, now this issue is here. Obviously, you're going to take up jurisdiction, but there is a defense to be made by the employer. Why not a remand where a fact finder can hear from deed how this works and figure out whether or not there was a mistake that was the fault of the employer or it was entirely deed's fault, in which case the clock didn't start?
In the event that the court finds that the extra record documentation deed submitted in support of the distinction between the accounts is insufficient without further testimony, deed would ask for a remand for further proceedings on that question.
Nothing like being able to read the court.
Yeah. I've looked at those documents. I don't know what those documents mean or what they say. It seems like you need somebody to explain those documents to a fact finder who then can say, I find, based on the documents and the testimony, that this is what happened. And I note that in Stassen, our court said, you know, the ULJ was convinced, based on the record, that the employer bore no responsibility for the mistake. It was a decision based on the record and the facts found by the ULJ, and we don't have that luxury here. Sorry. Did you have a question?
Somewhat a departure from that, though. Appreciating all of that, I think I don't quite get what the mistake was if they had the same address. So I think we're at that tail end, and I'm on pins and needles to know why the employer didn't know about the notice.
Deed's statutory obligation is to mail determinations of eligibility or ineligibility to the last known mailing address, which is often distinct from a primary address. In this case, the most recent employer account has made consistent filings since 2005 that all determinations be mailed to its service address, which is care of its own employment law expert in St. Louis, Missouri.
There were two choices given the employee with the same address. And that address, I don't know if did he pick the wrong, did it matter which one he picked, if in fact there's another address that's
so he
out
would
there?
Not have seen the service address.
Right.
So he would have had a choice between two primary addresses. And I don't know from a sort of a reconstructive point after the hearing whether the primary address he was able to see for the second account is exactly the same as the primary address he would see for the first employer account, but they are both Minnesota-based addresses.
Okay, so he picked inadvertently the wrong account, and somewhere else, the right account has a different address from
that is
the
correct.
Wrong account. I see. Okay.
I assume you only get to you if you're the employee. It's like you got to put in one address. You can't put in both.
That is correct. In fact, you don't select an address at all. You just select an employer, and there is an address visible adjacent to the employer in the dropdown. But you don't. It's sort of a mischaracterization to think that you get a choice between three or four primary addresses, which are visible within the employer's account profile.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. So based on what you're telling us, there is nothing else the employee could have done to know the service address, which appears to be not one of the two addresses that he, well, there's no indication that he could have done anything else to get it to the service address. Would that be a fair statement?
That's fair.
And it would have gone there had he picked the right one.
It would
accident.
Have.
I see, okay.
But he didn't know how to pick the right one because he didn't know how to pick the right one.
That is
correct.
Because
no one told him. And the only information on the website was, so now it's like, it seems even worse for the employee. It's okay. Because maybe if there were two addresses and you got to pick one, and one is in Nebraska and one is, you know, where you kind of show up every day, okay, I think I'd know what I'd do. But then you could at least make an argument, well, you know, you should have called somebody, you know, like, you know, everybody else in the world comes up with these arguments when someone blows the wrong address. But here it's like what more could he have done to kind of get the right place?
There is no argument from Deed that he could have done more.
Okay. And presumably, Northern Pine, I mean, does the record indicate how big a company this is?
The record does not.
Okay. But presumably they're big enough that they've got to place a service address in St. Louis with another address in Minneapolis.
That is not necessarily indicative of size or operation. Talks UCM is a service.
But it indicates they've lawyered up. I mean, you know, once you've got service addresses, that suggests there's some sophistication there.
It does.
If there were a hearing on this, is there evidence to be presented that, you know, the employer, you know, should have known two accounts, we got to clear this up to make sure we're getting our mail? Or, I mean,
there's no evidence of that effect. The employer terminated its tax-paying account in 2004.
And started a new account. And you're saying as a result of that, Deed left the old account up on the screen. It was erroneously clicked, so this went to the wrong address.
That is accurate.
But none of this is in the record below.
That is correct.
Okay. And a hearing on remand, this sort of gets to what is the legal standard under our case law, or what are you arguing it should be? Because it seems like Deed's argument is this is a no-fault mistake. The employee is not at fault. The employer is not at fault because both of those things were kept because they did have two different accounts. And Deed's not at fault because it is reasonable for them to keep the old account for a purpose that you identified, et cetera. So is the argument from Deed that if it's just a bookkeeping problem that no one is at fault for, but then can be corrected by Deed?
That is accurate, and the correction is the additional proceedings that were extended under this matter after.
But who, I thought Judge Larkin, in reading from one of the papers, was like, and it's up to the employer to kind of update this stuff. I mean, would that be a fair statement?
That's a correct interpretation of Stassen, an interpretation that Deed shares. However, the employer in this case has done that. It's maintained an accurate, singular service address since 2005, and that is the last known mailing address for the employer and the address that Deed has a statutory obligation to mail determinations to.
So Stassen's different because in that case, the notice was sent to an incorrect address, and the problem was the employer thought it had updated its address, but it hadn't gone through all the steps necessary to do so. We're not talking about updating an address. We're talking about, you know, changing account status. And
different than that, the employer in this case made no errors. Everything was accurate. I think analogous in the sense that in Stassen, you've got an employer with multiple unit numbers, meaning multiple branches. But they've got a physical sort of central address, and that's the primary address. But the unit or individual branch address wasn't updated. So here it's analogous in that you've got a physical address that the department mailed to based upon the procedure that we've discussed this morning. And it is the wrong address because the employer had, in this case, accurately maintained.
So at this hearing, you know, Relator doesn't have counsel. He doesn't know that the rules are 20 days or that this is an issue. You folks, or the employer didn't raise it. I mean, does the ULJ have some responsibility at some point to kind of go down and say, well, you sent a notice so long ago, you're asking for $18,000 overpayment. What happened? How is it that we're here now with this late appeal?
The ULJ would have... Deed initially mails a notice of nullification to the applicant informing them that it had no jurisdiction to issue the initial determination. The employer on that initial determination is incorrect. The ULJ, at the time the ULJ heard this hearing, there was no overpayment calculated. The applicant had been determined eligible to receive unemployment benefits.
I got it. But I'm just wondering why somebody didn't look down and, you know, I know we look at our case like, oh, when was this heard? Why is it 2 years later? I mean, we've got this sort of hard, fast rule about you must file it within 20 days, otherwise there's no jurisdiction, no exception. I'm just wondering how
an explanation,
even the ULJ didn't kind of notice
a pure the timing speculation problem. On part of the analysis of the ULJ, but this was, of course, during the height of the pandemic, and it was not unusual for judges to hear things that are arising more than 7 months after separation dates at this time.
You know, I did have one more question, Judge
Larkin.
Mm-hmm. You know, we keep talking about the wrong address as if you know, everybody knows that the twins are in Minneapolis and, you know, he sent it to Hawaii. I mean, he sent it to the address that was on the system, and that was the only address he could have sent it to. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. Allen?
That would not be a fair statement.
Why is
it not? I
would
distinguish it because the applicant didn't send anything. Deed sent the determination. And Deed sent the determination to not the most or late last known mailing address. And for that reason, consistent with Stassen, where Deed mailed it in April of 2020,
so,
was wrong.
But, I mean, he had, I mean, the address comes up, he pushes the button, and it's not, there's nothing more he can do, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
However, our reading of Stassen is that jurisdiction doesn't begin until it's mailed to the correct address, regardless of complicity of the applicant or Deed, as long as the employer has made no error. And that's Deed's position here. Mm. The employer's consistently and accurately kept updated information with the department for almost 17 years.
Thank you, Judge Larkin.
Thank you. Appreciate your arguments. We'll have a rebuttal now.
Thank you, Your Honor. Not much on rebuttal other than to... I know it's not lost here today, but I think it bears repeating that the order became final. And Deed is very strict, and so is the court, about finality of these decisions. And I mean, if it was Mr. Mann missing an appeal by a day, mm-hmm. he would be shot down. And I would tell him, you're going to be shot down. There's no way. They're very hard and fast, and there's a reason for that. You know, but so people have finality and certainty. And if this is allowed to, it's just one of these situations where if it's allowed to go on and the either, you know, affirmed or remanded and the same result happens, you know, a relator can never, they just can't rest easy that, oh, this decision's final and I'm going to get these benefits. I mean, this guy was getting for 6 months and now he's got to repay a bunch of money. And yeah, it was the pandemic. And things were upside down, but he did everything right. And you know, this allowing this nullification in these orders in these amended determinations to go forward really did prejudice him. Now I know that the argument is, well, he was able to have a hearing, but he's not guaranteed of what that hearing is going to come, what's going to happen. So, and one final thought here is that it seems like this is a very good situation for. When these are supposed to be, the statutes for the unemployment are supposed to be sort of favorable to the employee, the applicant, I mean, construed in that way. It seems like this is a situation calling out for that because everything else is sort of, nobody did anything really intentionally wrong here, but Mr. Mann is the one who's being punished and is bearing the burden of having to repay this money.
Well, I do have a question. So, your client, I think, Deed clearly says did nothing wrong. I mean, there are two things that appeared. They have the same address, but that address doesn't even matter because it's like the updated address later. He picks one of them, totally not his fault. The employer on the relevant account kept up to date for years with its correct address, did nothing wrong with respect to that. Deed, unless you think it's wrong, I'm not sure what Deed did wrong. They had two accounts, they maintain them for reasons that make administrative sense apparently to them. So if no one did anything wrong and he got a notice of eligibility once and then it was rescinded and then got a second one, has a right to a hearing, what's outside statutory authority and what is even so, I mean, I appreciate that it's like I breathed easy for a while, but he did get a notice of eligibility and then had a chance for a hearing. I'm not sure why that shouldn't be something that could be corrected when no one did anything wrong, the employer, the employee, or even Deed.
Well, I think the critical point here, and of course we don't have all the facts on it, is they did get this. It was sent to their mailing address. There's nobody saying we didn't get it. So did they have an obligation then to say, okay, what are we supposed to do with this? You know, should we appeal it? Should we send it to TALC or whoever? That's the missing portion here.
That's what, you know, my concern is. What if there were an evidentiary hearing on remand and they were put to the question, did you actually receive this? And they said, well, yeah, we did. I mean, that then I mean, I think that might result in something different. I think the problem here is we just don't know. And again, I appreciate all the explanations. I appreciate the documents. But this is why we have people sworn under oath and present testimony. And the ULJ can ask the questions he or she needs to make findings addressing the legal principle in Stassen, which is, well, if the employer didn't get it and it was no fault of the employer, the clock doesn't start. So, I mean, somebody could argue, well, if the employer did get it or it was the employer's fault, we just don't know.
I guess my trouble with that part of it is, first, we don't know if they, I think they got it. There's no evidence to say they did. But is the fact of whether or not they got it or not, does that somehow override the finality of the initial determination?
Well, Stassen says it does, because Stassen says if they didn't get it through no fault of their own, the clock doesn't start.
But so we're missing that part of Stassen here. That is, we don't know if they got it or not.
But that's why I say, why not a remand? And you keep coming back to, well, yeah, they can't win. It's like, well, no, they can win if they can show employer did nothing wrong and didn't receive it. So I appreciate the argument about finality, but our court has a published opinion saying, no, there's an exception to finality if wasn't received through no fault of the employer.
And I did add one final question, if I may.
Of course.
Mr. Bolter, there's no indication that mail was not being delivered in the pandemic, is there?
No.
Thank you.
I think, Your Honor,
you could stop.
Did you refer to Stassen as a published decision? Or
I think it's published, is it not?
I thought it was not published.
No, I'm looking at it. 814
published?
Northwestern.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor, unless there's any further questions.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your arguments and the briefing. You'll have our decision within time required by statute, if not sooner.